Okay, if you're wondering who's here, I'll just say very briefly, there's a big legends are here, very big legends are here. They're Rabinowitz family. Most guys here don't know them. They're not affiliated with this yeshiva, to my chagrin, but they're affiliated. They're affiliated with everything. So it's a great honor, a great surprise, a great honor to have, first of all, Mr. and Mrs., but Zeke is also a great honor to have Zeke.
Yeah, Zeke.
Zeke is a chashuv of Talmud and Reisha right now, and I'll drive you in. Next time I'll drive you in. I'll drive you back.
Kobe legend.
Work out the transportation.
Kobe legend.
Big legends here. Okay, so I'm not going to speak long. I know everybody's tired. You had a long couple days. But I did want to leave with one message that I think is valuable. If you're able to stick it out for the long day and the long night. As we go through the storyline, we meet a lot of characters that are supposed to make a tremendous imprint on our lives. Are they the characters that we're supposed to try to emulate? We're supposed to look up to and understand that whatever they set up ahead of us, however they preceded us, our job is, to a large degree, to follow in their tracks. So the more we understand, the more we learn about them, the better equipped we are to know how to live our lives, to know what values, what beliefs to stand up for. And sometimes it's easy, because we know a lot about Avram, we know a lot about Yaakov, Yosef, but there's a missing link in the chain. There's very little that we know, there's very little that's recorded about Yitzchak. It's one or two stories, and I think the one or two stories are extremely indicative of how little we know about him. When he's a child, he gets arrows shot at him by Ishmael, but we don't know his response. He was quiet. He was silent. A few years later, a few decades later, he's brought to the Akedah, and he's submissive. He doesn't share his thoughts, he doesn't have an opinion, but he submits his will to his father's will, to Hashem's will, and he's not known, we don't know, his thoughts, his emotions, if he said anything, if he had anything to say. And you find that again and again, because even now, when we encounter Yitzchak, when we expect, when we hope to encounter him, to understand him, Hayadaito Loredis Lemitzrayim. So there was something occurred in his lifetime. There was a drought, and he wanted to go down to Mitzrayim. Kemoshi Yard Aviv, similar to how his father did, in the days of famine. And Amar Leh, Hashem said to him, Al Tered Mitzrayim, Sha'ata Ola Tamima. He said, you're a holy korban. You were set up at the Akedah, you became an Ola Tamima, korban Ola, pure korban Ola. The Ein Chutz La'aretz Kedai Lo. He had, for what I understand, in a very holy way, he had a very delicate constitution. He was somebody, he was a being, Yitzhak Avinu was a being, that shouldn't be tampered with. He shouldn't stray too far. He shouldn't leave Chutz La'aretz. And the most we know is that he, at best, just tried to mirror his father's actions. The one major storyline that we know in his lifetime, Vayashav Yitzchak, it's a strange adjective. He sat. Yitzchak sat. This is not the way the following action is usually done. But he sat. Vayafbor Be'eros. And he dug wells. He sat in a position of sitting, in a position of being immobile. He dug wells. As the same ones that Sharchafru Bimei Avram, but the same wells that were dug already by his father, by Avram. Vayikra Lehen Shemos, and he even called their names after they were filled up by the Plishtim. They seemed new wells in his lifetime, but the names that he called them, Kishemos Asher Kara Lehen Aviv, the same names that his father called him. So at best, he's just mirroring his father. But the whole time silent and submissive. And it's ironic, almost hypocritical, that he's known for the Midah of Gvura. Gvura means strength. And you ask yourself, where? Where does he exhibit any sign of strength? You wonder, you ask yourself if maybe our definition of strength is wrong. Because the storyline of Yitzchak shows no indication of strength in any way. And all we're really known for, the major storyline that's shared with us, that Hashem decided to share with us, which is usually the most profound and the most important information that we need to know about him, is that he dug wells. And he dug one well, and it was contested by the Plishtim. And so he dug another well, and again contested, and eventually dug three or maybe seven, depends how you learn the story. And that's what he was. And it's for sure disappointing, for sure disappointing to learn about the Avos who's supposed to exhibit the Midah of Gvura, that he was ultimately a well digger. I don't know, back in the day, what a well digger made or how much honor a well digger received, but I can't imagine a well digger was a parent's pride. I can't imagine good Jewish parents would hope for their children to become well diggers. Doesn't sound like the most glorious legacy. And yet, the major storyline in Yitzchak's life is that he was chafer be'eros, he dug wells that his father already dug. And he named those wells the same names that his father already named them. And there's also one more small thing that he gave us. He gave us a new form of tefillah. By him, it doesn't say that he prayed. It says he vayetar. He vayetar, a strange word. Uncleus just says it means tzoli, he prayed. But it's a new word for prayer, vayetar. And Rashi explains that the word vayetar means he davened a lot. He was hirba vehiftzer, he davened a lot. Now let me ask you a question. He's married 10 years, he doesn't have children. He's married to a woman that left everything. She stood up against everything she was born among and in and around. And she came to live in Beis Avram and Beis Yitzchak. And they were ready to build the future of Kal Yisrael. And 10 years already, they have no children. So that's his greatness, that he davened a lot. You have no children, your wife's an akara. And your greatness, you're telling me, is that you davened a lot? Who's not davening a lot? This is what he gave to the world, that he was capable of davening a lot in the most dire of circumstances. That when life was terrible and challenging, and you don't know if there's a light at the end of the tunnel, that was his godless, that he davened a lot? That he was vayetar? So I'll tell you that I think in the last couple days when you guys were on a trip, I hope that there were some feelings of guilt. Some, not too much, not too harsh, but some feelings of guilt. You're going on a trip, you're taking a break, and the world is, like we spoke about in the past few weeks, the world is on flames. The world is up in flames right now. And you're going on a trip to have a good time, to enjoy yourself. So I imagine some healthy guys, most healthy guys, you have some feelings of guilt. But the rationale is bitula zeu kiyuma. Sometimes you got to take a break in order to come back invigorated. Sometimes you need a day off to come back and be a little bit stronger. And that's justifiable. That's reasonable. There's truth to that. Because what happens is when you get holed up in yeshiva, we're here already. We're here a long time. It's not long, but it feels long. Because the days in yeshiva, they become very repetitive. Now they feel, I want to emphasize the word feel. They feel repetitive. There's nothing repetitive about yeshiva. We're learning new things. We're exposed to new ideas. We're having new discussions. We're meeting new friends. We're introduced to new people. There's nothing repetitive about yeshiva, but that's on a mental, on an emotional, on an intellectual level. There's nothing repetitive about yeshiva. But on a physical level, and unfortunately we're very physical, it's a physically repetitive place. You come in at the same time, the same day, and you're tired, and you have to go through the same motions day in and day out, and the daily grind of yeshiva could feel very repetitive. So it's justifiable that once every so often, it should happen more, but circumstances don't allow, but once every so often, even when the world is up in flames, it's justifiable that once every so often you need a Rav Shaiki invitational. It's understood. You need to climb Masada. And personally, the trip committee of this yeshiva is not interested, in my opinion, for good reason. I'm not a participating member. But I was petitioning for well digging this week. When they told me Wednesday and Thursday the chevra is going out, I said, let's go dig a well. Digging a well could be the most exciting, most adventurous, most novel experience you've ever had. And the best they can give me was farming, they told me in response. We'll go pick apples. That's fantastic. I think the picking apples is good on an economic level, it's good on a chesed level, many levels. But they don't understand that you can't substitute for well digging. But the trip committee told me, and I'm obviously dramatizing, there was no conversation in real life, but if there were, the trip committee told me that there are time constraints. Because to climb Masada, if you JR, takes 18 minutes and change. Very impressive. The farming, I guess I never picked apples, but I'm guessing an hour or two. Maybe watermelons are harder, I don't know, but I guess it's within a window of time that's reasonable. But wells, and I looked this up because I needed to know my stuff, so I looked it up. Wells need to be dug. We're talking 500 to 1,000 feet deep. That's a residential well. I don't even know what a residential well means, but a residential well is 500 to 1,000 feet deep. That's got to take for, you know, us rich white kids from New York, it's got to take us about a couple years, I would say, to figure out how to do that. So I understand that we can't dig wells. But the actual digging is not the hardest part. I think the hardest part about digging these wells is the unknown. Because no matter how much research, how much science, how many statistics, and how much experience you have, you'll always encounter the unknown when you dig a well. Because you're looking, you're searching, and you're hoping that the unknown area that you choose to stick the shovel in the ground will produce the source of life. And it's always you're taking a gamble. It's always somewhat of a risk where you start and how deep you go and how deep you're willing to continue until you give up. Because there's always going to be water underneath. The question is how much. The question is how pure. But there's always something there. But you have a threshold. You have to determine how much can you push until you give up and move on to the next. And there's a lot of interpretations about what Yitzchak was digging for. The Ramban says he was digging for the spiritual foundations of the first, second, and please God soon, the third Beis HaMikdash. Tzfas Emes says he was digging up the Kedusha of Shabbos Kodesh. One thing's for sure, and I say this seriously, not a joke, I say it seriously. One thing's for sure, he wasn't digging tunnels. And the contrast is important. Because in our day and age, in our present current times, we're very involved. We're thinking about digging tunnels, and dealing with tunnels that were dug. Tunnels are dug to hide. Tunnels are dug for us to go down, deep down inside of those tunnels, to hide what we're afraid to expose to the world, to hide our fears, our cowardice. Cowards dig tunnels. That's the manifestation of tunnels. It's for people who can't or not willing to show their face to the world. They need to hide. That's what tunnels are for. But one thing's for sure, that when you dig wells, you're not putting yourself, you're not hiding yourself away, but you're taking something from beneath and you're bringing it up. So after the Ramban and the Tzfas Emes, the Chafetz Chaim says with a simplicity as he always does, and simplicity is always the truth. When you get too complex, you know maybe you went too far. But the Chafetz Chaim says with the utmost simplicity that Yitzchok had to be busy. And I'm adding maybe a drop, but Yitzchok had to be busy after growing up in the great shoes of his father, of Avram, in the shadow of the greatest man up until and maybe since that point to ever exist. Yitzchok had to be busy. Yitzchok had a great challenge. Yitzchok had a great journey, a long journey, a difficult journey to dig up all of his own capabilities, the depth of everything that he could do. Because on the surface, if you're satisfied with the surface, with the superficial, you can't compete. There's nothing he could add or contribute to a world that saw his father, that saw Avram. All he had was to dig deep, and it was a long journey to dig deep and really deep, to dig up and find and uncover the capabilities that he had. Because the word gibor in Hebrew, in modern Hebrew, the word gibor means hero. And it's not always accurate. The translations are not always precise. But I found that in this, with this word, hero comes from a Latin heros. And the definition of the word heros in Latin is a person of superhuman qualities. A person of superhuman qualities and often semi-divine origin, whose accomplishments are the subjects of myths and legends. Gvura means a person who contains the belief that there are infinite superhuman and semi-divine capabilities that are waiting to be discovered. And a gibor is a person who's willing to dig and find them. When I come to yeshiva every year, I meet very basic guys. Basic not because that's my opinion, but basic because I often find that that's their opinion. That they're basic, average, generic guys. They did well in school, well enough, a little above average in their athletic capabilities, some more, some less. And they tread in this middle of society where they perceive themselves as okay, as fine. But it's rare to find a person who has a belief, who walks and thinks about himself with a belief that there are infinite superhuman and semi-divine capabilities that are waiting to be discovered. And I want to tell you why. There's one reason why. It's not complicated why. Because it takes a gibor to be willing to dig. And not everybody's willing to dig, and not because it's difficult. You could get over that hurdle. Not because you're lazy, God forbid you're not. But it's because you never dug before. And if you ever dug before, you would have found, it's inevitable, you would have found, to start, a few drops. You would have found maybe a small stream. You would have found a gallon or two. And then if you would have persevered and continued, you would have found in some area of your life more and more, and then so much water you would have never believed what was brewing beneath the surface. And it's a big mistake because Vayetar, when he davened, it doesn't mean he davened a lot. It's the wrong definition. Vayetar means he davened deep. He davened, vehiftzer means he davened with an urgency. It means, the word atar means that he urged God's will. He forced God's hand. When we daven, when a person davens, you daven, okay. You live in the middle, in that realm of my capabilities in context, have some power, and I'll give what I can, when I can, how I can. But you lack, sometimes we lack, we, humanity, we lack, our generation lacks that belief that there are infinite, superhuman, and semi-divine capabilities that are waiting to be discovered, and only because you've yet to discover the first. But once you discover the first, it's so easy then to discover the second and the third and the 50th and the 100th. Because you know when there's one well, there's going to be a 2 and a 3 and a 7. And a 7 is Shabbos Kodesh. A 7 is the third base of Mikdash. They're all digging for the same things. For that infinite well of eternity, of Shabbos and Beis HaMikdash, and the person in the depths of himself. And I want to say, you know, tonight we have a small crowd. I feel it's an intimate crowd. Sometimes I'm uncomfortable sharing personal things. Not about me, but about you. But intimate crowd, so I'm comfortable to share a personal thing. And it makes it a little easier. Most of you are not going to know who I'm talking about. But there's a guy here, and he knows who he is. And I don't need to tell anybody who he is. I just need to know that he knows who he is. He spent time in this yeshiva, a good time, a good amount of time in this yeshiva, losing one chavrusa after the next. And he got, in the beginning, one and then another, and this one didn't work out, and he dumped him, and she dumped him, and she dumped her, and all the drama, one after the next, afternoon and morning, and it was a mystery. You couldn't understand how come it wasn't working out, and then morning Seder, it wasn't going well, you didn't have a chavrusa, it's a struggle. And then it kept going, the cycle was non-stop, it wasn't ending, and felt like all was lost, because then you stop coming and you get busy with other things, you develop other hobbies and other habits, and you find other things to keep yourself occupied with. Until this person in this room started to believe, this is my understanding, he started to believe that maybe there are infinite superhuman capabilities within myself that are waiting to be discovered. And I thought it would have taken a couple day trip now to go to a well digging festival. Couldn't find one. So he did it on his own. And he decided you can't get a chavrusa. So he took out a pen and paper, maybe a laptop, each one on his own. And he started just to type up notes. So he started to learn. His chavrusa was Abaye, his chavrusa was Rava, his chavrusa was Tosfos once in a while, his Rebbe also. And if he couldn't get a chavrusa, then he found different chavrusas. Abaye and Rava are plenty capable. Reish Lakish, Rabbi Yochanan, the Ramban, the Rashba, the Meiri. Until I got a voice note this morning from his Rebbe. And he told me he's typing up his notes better than I could ever type them up. His Rebbe told me his notes are better than my own, said his Rebbe. And this is a boy who, he knows who he is, felt that his learning was subpar. He felt that his learning was inferior. He felt that it must be that maybe he couldn't hold on. He couldn't lock in a chavrusa because there was something wrong with him. Until he got to this clear conclusion that there's a well waiting to be dug, and I got to just take out my shovel and start digging. Because if you dig and you persevere in that pursuit and you know that you're going to hit gold, you're going to hit absolute gold, then it's going to give you the motive and the incentive to persevere and to keep going even when it looks like all hope was lost. And the hardest thing as a Rebbe, I say for myself, is when guys have so much depth, but they're not willing to dig. And it's so easy, often for me, to see what you have, to see these springs that occasionally they splurge. You can't hide it sometimes. You try very hard, but these springs, they naturally flow out of you. And I wish that each guy would see about himself these superhuman, infinite, semi-divine capabilities that are waiting beneath the surface. Because I could say this with my friend, you know, two adults in the room, a couple parents, myself. We both know that when we were 18 and 19, we knew nothing about ourselves. We knew nothing about what we were capable to contribute to this world. But we took out our shovels and we started digging in one place and then the next place and then the final place. And every time you felt it was the last place, there's 1,000 more afterwards. And when you found the first, you realize how capable you are. Not just capable. How divine your attributes are. How much you could contribute. And then your davening becomes a vayetar. You're not dragging your feet in 5 minutes late to davening because you discovered that you could urge God to do your will. If you could urge God to do, I'm not talking about a lot of tefillos. I'm not talking about 3 and then 6 and then 20 and then 50 and then a year later. I'm talking about one prayer. Vayetar is one prayer that you individually take that one prayer and you turn it into a vayetar because you know that deep down inside, if you tap into it, you have that divine, superhuman capability to vayetar, to turn God's will into your own. And if you would only know that, if you'd only go on more trips to dig wells. And now we're starting a fresh experience in yeshiva after we had a few good days off. Please God, it should be a wonderful Shabbos. Next week will be incredible. And then hopefully everybody's by the Rebbeim for next Shabbos. Please God, it should work out. A new Zman, a fresh Zman. A Mechudish Dik Zman. And in this Zman, you realize that I touched the surface until now. You touched a lot of wonderful surfaces until now. And the heavy winter Zman is the time to take out your shovels. But before you take them out, you got to know. You're going to hit gold. You're going to hit gold. As long as you dig. And digging is not hard. Don't let anybody make you nervous and tell you it takes effort. Digging is not hard. It doesn't take effort. It takes belief. And if it's hard for you to believe, call my bluff. Please come over to me and ask me why I believe. And if you don't know me well enough, then ask your Rebbe why he believes. But there are people who know you sometimes better than yourself. And they know that there's a lot to believe in. So please God, this winter's man, these next couple months that we have ahead of us. Please man, it's enough with the superficial. We're not going farming. We're not picking cucumbers over here. It's not an hour or two event. This is a well-digging adventure that we're going on. And you dig deep, and please God, Bezus Hashem, will all discover these divine, these incredible superhuman capabilities we have. And that will be our contribution, not just to ourselves, not just to Yeshiva, not to Klal Yisrael in the time that we need it most, but to the future, to your future, to everybody's future. Have a good Shabbos.